Accession number 9269, Reel 1.
Mr. Connor, Reel 1. When did you join the Marines, Mr. Connor?
1935, September.
Why did you decide to join?
For a change.
What had you been doing before?
Worked in a factory in Rochdale, Lancashire.
And was it easy to get in?
Well, you had to pass a physical and also the written exam, education exam.
What about the initial training? Was it tough?
Yes, no, pretty tough. They trained you properly there. And they told us if you couldn't make the grade, you could leave there and go and join the Army or the Navy. It was a very tough training. It was all right, came through it.
When was it that you joined the Exeter?
1936, December.
And what kind of a ship was she to serve on?
She was a very happy ship, a good crowd of men on there. Plenty of initial training on that, because when a ship, when they go aboard a ship and the commission, what they call commission, then you got to work that ship up into a wartime routine. And so you have plenty of training and also accidents and things like that. And so it's when the event of a war starting, it can revert immediately from a peacetime to a wartime footing.
Was she a comfortable ship to live on?
She was all right as ships went in those days. It's quite comfortable. Of course, in those days you slept in hammocks, you didn't have bunks and things like that. But it's quite good.
What about vermin? Were there vermin aboard the ship?
Oh, you get cockroaches on any ship, and a few rats. There's always cockroaches on every ship. They were all right with the cockroaches, and they never bothered you. You'd see them crawling about, and occasionally you'd have a cockroach hunt and try to kill as many as you can, but you can't. You keep cockroaches off any ship. Even the best liners today, the QE and things like that, they're riddled with cockroaches.
Did they worry you at all?
No, no. There's only one time, had a bit of a laugh. You had the Marine Guard on the quarter deck. There's some big noise coming aboard or something. And we had those white helmets on. And the fellow in the front rank, we were behind, looked. We saw a cockroach come out of his helmet and start crawling down his neck over his tunic.
Now, when the war broke out, did it take you by surprise or not?
No. Because Commodore Harwood, in 1937, he told us, he says, "War will be breaking out," he says, "very soon. And you've got to be on the war footing right away and be well trained." And in 1938, it was off the coast of Brazil at the time of Munich, with a darkened ship that went to defence watches. And we just shadowed a German ship all the time, just on the horizon, until Chamberlain signed the pact, and then that was it. I went back again. I went to Brazil. But Howard told us then, he said, the war hadn't started this time. He said, we were starting, he said, very soon. It was about 12 months out. And were he told us the war had started.
Were you dismayed when war was declared or not?
Well, I don't know. Maybe a bit apprehensive.
Now, can you tell me about the period when you were hunting for the German pocket battleship in the South Atlantic?
Well, we're hunting up, it was sailing up and down the South Atlantic, and also a very tiring business when you call defence watches. I was 4 hours on in the gunhouse and 4 hours off watch to have your meals, have a bath, wash your clothes and things like that. And also I used to go to dawn action stations every morning when it's coming dawn. And if you have the middle watch and dawn was about 5 o'clock, you do from 12 to 4, back there again for dawn action stations at 5, if dawn was at 5. By the time dawn action station be over, about 6, and then you're back on watch again at 8 o'clock. And so you're always on the go.
Where was your own action station?
Beachhead. The Marines Terry was Beachhead. That was the second Terry from forward, just underneath the bridge.
And what was your job in B turret?
I was gun layer. I used to follow the used to be receiver in front of me with degrees and minute pointers on, and the director layer used to lay his sights on the target, and that would be transmitted down electrically to the receiver. You used to have a receiver with degree and the minute pointers wrong to the gun, and we had to line those up. And when you were on the lined up and it was loaded, you gave the sign to a breech worker and he closed the interceptor, which made electrical connection to director layer's trigger. When he pulled the trigger, the guns would fire. Then I had to lock a slide and fetch a gun down to loading angle until the loaders had loaded the gun again, and then they closed the breech. I should take it back onto target again, put the hand up, and the breech worker closed the interceptor again, so they're all lined up. But in the director tower they had a strip of light with each turret and the guns on it, and see, with two guns in each turret, waste all those lights lit. Then he knew that all the guns were loaded and ready, and he could fire when he was on target again.
Did you have to be quick?
Oh yes, you had to be as quick as possible. Used to fire another 8-inch gun by the time they loaded and get on target again. With a bit of luck, about 12 seconds, you'd be on target again.
Was that what they figure you had to aim at, 12 seconds?
Well, it depended on the elevation. Naturally, if the gun was high elevation, it'd take a bit longer to bring the gun down and lock it and get back up again.
Now, can you tell me what you recollect of the battle right from the beginning, giving as much detail as you can recollect?
It was on that day, B turret had the forenoon watch, and we stood down from action station about 5:30 a.m. I went back on the mess desk to get a little bit of sleep before breakfast, before going back on watch. I was just falling asleep when the alarm went, action stations, and so I dashed up to the gunhouse and got inside the gunhouse. And the captain of the Marine, who was captain of the turret, he says, I think the target's a pocket battleship. And he says, good laying and good training and best of luck, lads. And then they came over the telephone, the telephone operator, and said, load, load, load. And so we loaded the guns, put it on target, and then we started firing. We fired about 6 shots, while the gun was loading, I turned round to the range taker. I said, "How are we going on, Ginger?" He says, "We've hit." And they took the gun back on target, brought it down again for about the 7th or the 8th broadside. I just locked the gun onto a loading angle, and then there was one big crash and a flash, and the place full of smoke, and I felt something strike me on the head, and I fell out of the seat a bit, and then the place was full of fumes. And then the sergeant of the turret said, "Evacuate the gunouts." And so we got through the escape hatch. There were about 7 of us there. And he says to me, "What's up with you?" "Well, blood running down the face." He said, "You better go down to the sick bay." And there was another marine there who'd been bleeding a bit. He said, "You two get down to the sick bay." And so we went down the ladder to the sick bay, but the sick bay was in a shambles. We couldn't do anything in there. And so we patched each other up. And then the men of the crew who was left, they went inside the gunhouse, and they made it safe, got the cordite out and threw it overboard. And they managed to get a bloke out who was wounded, but importantly, he died of wounds after. And the men who were in there, they're all smashed up. And then hanging about on the upper deck, and then the grass bay vanished, and then we just staggered down to the Falklands. We got told to break off and make our way to the Falklands.
You said the ship sick bay was in a shambles. Can you be more specific?
Well, it'd been hit quite a few times, gone through the bridge and smashing things up, and been hit below decks, been on fire, but the damage control managed to get the fires out. It's a bit of a mess. She kept going though.
What was the scene which greeted your eyes when you emerged from B turret?
Oh, I got onto B gun deck, the paravanes were there, but they all been smashed up, and she was steaming along, and the guns were firing, A turret in front of us, and Y, the after turret, and then we went down below to get patched up.
Did you see the hit on A turret?
Pardon?
Did you see the hit on A turret?
No. No, right. Or away somewhere when that were that one got hit.
When you came out of the turret, were people rushing around all over the place?
No, not really, because the upper deck were cleared, you see. All the men were at the stations. There was nothing out there. I'd just come on the gun deck, and the place is all empty. Except one or two on the forecastle. The blacksmith were up there. Who got killed up there? I think he was trying to fix a cable.
Did the ship look a shambles when you got out of the turret?
Well, there were one or two holes about. We didn't see the shambles, and we got down the ladder into the lower deck, into the waist of the ship.
What did you see down there?
Well, there's men who had been wounded were trying to get through, and they were looked down into the other ladder in the waist to the mess decks. The crowd of men down there with hose pipes and the smoke coming up.
What happened to your shipmates in B turret?
Well, there's about 15 of us in there. I think there was 7 killed outright. There was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 killed outright, and one wounded, hit his arm off, he died of wounds. And a couple of us just slightly wounded, and the remainder were okay. Been the on the loading angle with the breaches, been the loading angle, that saved a lot of the debris coming through to the back of us. Had the gun had been on the firing angle, it had been all clear there, the breach would have been down in the well. There's no doubt a debris had come right across and killed a lot of the people at the back. We were just lucky that it didn't put on the loading angle.
Who were the ones who survived from B turret? Can you remember?
Well, yes. You mean the names?
Yes.
Oh, there's Camp, Fred Winstanley, Hawkins, Sergeant Wild, Atwood, Rowe, and then there was Russell, but he died of wounds. And the two range takers are back, Jones and Thomas.
And who were the ones who were killed?
Stubbs, Crocker, Mills. Marsh. There was Captain Woods and a fellow, I think it was called Hetherington, and Blanford, and then Russell, of course, he died after.
Who was in charge of B turret?
The Captain of Marines, Captain Woods. He was a captain of the turret, but he got killed. Sergeant Wild, the GI, the second captain of the turret.
What was this Captain Woods like as an officer in charge?
Oh, he was a good bloke, Woods. Timber Woods, we used to call him, the nickname. He was a very good bloke.
Well, how badly injured were you yourself?
Well, I just got my head cut open, about 6 stitches in. One or two pieces in the hand, but they weren't much.
What kind of treatment did you get?
Well, it was about 2 days after when I got my head stitched up, because the doctor was busy with the badly wounded men. It was all right after that.
How many stitches did you have?
I think it was 5 or 6, something like that.
Did you suffer from headaches or anything of that kind?
No. I had a bit of a headache at the time, naturally, but it soon went away. Nothing really.
Was it a frightening experience when you were in B turret?
Well, when you're firing, I say you're kind of very busy, you know, doing your job, and you've got to concentrate on the job. So really, you don't have much time really to be frightened. But once it got hit, you know, you see the shambles, and you think to yourself, oh, well, next one, I may be one of those fellows. It happened, they didn't get it.
It must have been a horrifying sight after the shell hit the turret.
Yes, it was. I'm sorry, but again, smashed up quite a few of them. It's like a butcher's shop.
Were people screaming? Were people screaming, or were they
silent? Oh, no. No, they were killed outright. And the fellow who was wounded, his arm off, and the other one smashed up. He was a very brave man. He never uttered a word. They took him out. And someone took him down to the sick, well, to the ward room, because the sick bay was in shambles. But he died in hospital in the Falkland Islands. He went to operate on his, well, his arm was off. They fixed that. There's some rivets in his other arm. They're operating, but he died on the operating table.
Whilst you were in action, was it orderly, or was there any panic?
Well, there was a rush to get to your action station. There was no panic, nobody screaming, nothing like that. Everybody's got a job to do, and they've been trained for that job for the last 3 years, and they knew what to do, and things like that. There's no panic.
How soon was the burial service for the dead arranged?
How was it?
The burial of the dead at sea. Yeah. Did that take place quickly afterwards?
I don't know if it was the first day or the second day. I know I buried them twice. They buried quite a while. I think it was the second day, I can't quite remember. It was the first day, but the same day or the day after. Because it didn't take long. You know, I had him on the planks. Well, we sawed him up in canvas, weighted on. And then the padre had a service and we put him overboard.
Was this a very moving occasion?
Yes, it was, because you got to... I'm sorry, we've been together for 3 years. I've been all over South America and North America, up the west coast of North America, east coast of North America, and twice around South America. And you knew everyone, because when you're aboard a ship, you live in very close proximity to each other. I mean, you see the bloke who sat across the table for the last 3 years and played cards and had gone ashore and a few drinks and all that, and then you tip him overboard, you feel kind of sad about it.
Did you know anything about the problems of getting the ship to the Falklands?
No, we managed to stagger down there. We got down all right. Because I was in the one of the flats laid down most of the time on the way down.
Were the crew worried about whether the Exeter would make it to the Falklands?
Oh, we'd make it. We knew we'd make it. It's a good, strong ship, as Exeter. I said, built ships in those days.
What kind of a welcome did you get at the Falklands?
Oh, wonderful. It was a wonderful welcome.
In what way?
Well, they sent all the badly wounded men to the hospital, which was only a small hospital, a cottage hospital. And the main of us, who could walk about, they sent us up to the hospital for treatment. And then when we came out of the hospital, there was a car outside, you know, for each one. They got in this car, they took us down to a house, the Bond family lived there. And they took us in, and we lived there for about 10 days or so. Those who were walking wounded, they called us. And they couldn't have been any better than those people. You know, they looked after us very, very well. We just stayed there. They gave it all the meals, and, well, as I mean, when you're a young lad and you've been hurt, and you get a kind of a woman, you know, kind of mothers you, and she appreciated a lot. They were very, very good people, the Falkland Islanders.
Did you have to pay for the billet?
No. The Navy offered all the Falkland Islanders so much a day, but I would keep. But the Falkland Islanders took that money, but they turned it over to the Defendants Fund. They didn't want to make any profit out of us. And they gave that money to them. Yes, all those Falkland Islanders are a good crowd of people. And there's every year we go to reunion, we always toast to Falkland Islanders.
How long were you in the billet, personally?
I was in there about 10 days. Chewed the stitches out and saw things were all right, then I went back aboard the ship again. We used to go ashore at night time and go to the house again to see them. There was a mother and father there and two sons. Yes, it was a very nice time there.
What were your duties on board once you'd recovered?
Well, I made the scratch crew up and did the guns crews, you know, on the way home. Relief crews and just the normal Marines duties on board, sentries and all that.
Can you remember anything about the voyage back?
About the what?
The voyage back to Britain?
Well, it was a long, tiring voyage. So we got back to England, over outside the Western Approaches, got a U-boat scare. It said that Hitler put the U-boats out to get us. One of the Blue Star liners got torpedoed and sunk there. And then we came back into Plymouth, and all the crowds were on the hove cheering us, going up and in the dockyard. And then Winston Churchill came aboard, had us all on the quarter deck, and gave us a bit of a speech, a welcome speech. He was the First Lord of the Admiralty then.
Had your folks back home got news of your safety soon after the battle?
Well, when I came home, the first thing they knew about it really was in the papers. We knew I was alive because he announced, you know, the next of kin had been informed, so they knew I was okay.
Did you send a telegram back to them?
No, we couldn't send telegrams from down there.
Now, going back to the pre-war period with the Exeter, I think that before the war you were involved with the dealing with riots in Trinidad. Can
yes.
you tell me about that?
Well, we're in Bermuda. We got word to raise steam. They said there were riots at Trinidad. And so I went full steam ahead to get down to Trinidad. They said some of the police had been killed. An inspector and a sergeant, where they clubbed them and poured all over them and set them on fire. So we went ashore to quiet things down. And so they sent the marine company ashore. But it was very quiet. So when they saw us, no, they wouldn't start anything. And they put a seaman's platoon, a stoker's platoon, at Port of Spain, guarding the docks and telephone exchanges and all that. And the other marines are flying patrol. We used to have a couple of buses. If there was any trouble sprouting anywhere, we went in to stop it. But never any trouble really, because I suppose the people at Trinidad, they knew if they did start anything, you know, they come off worse.
So you were in that company, were you?
Hmm.
What was the name of that company? What was the name of the company?
Oh, I don't know. Well, they called the Royal Marine Detachment, really. And the Ajax came also, and they landed. They sent the Marines ashore, and they was helping us out to go around the island. They made a nice break for us. A different change from the sea routine.
How many was in a company?
Oh, they sent about 40 of it ashore, I think. 40 or 50 of us went ashore with the Marines.
What were you armed with?
Rifles. Rifles and also a small truncheon.
Shields?
Huh?
Did you have shields?
No. Oh no, just a tin hat on, that's all, and a club in your hand, and a rifle over your shoulder.
What was the population in Trinidad like as far as their mood went? Were they in a surly mood or were they friendly or what?
No, they were very quiet. They were quite quiet people. Well, they saw us marching along and they never bothered.
Did you know what the cause of the trouble was?
Well, I don't know. You see, being in the force, you don't take any notice of politics, but some of those villages we went into, some of those kiddies there, the matchsticks legs and swollen bellies with pellagra, short of fresh